with it and they know they'll get away with it, and there's an awful lot of people who fair dodge because they know they can. And I think Mr. Jenrick, to be fair to him, is right to say that we've got to do something about that, because it's out of order that the vast majority of people are paying their fares only just to see a small minority who think the rules shouldn't and don't apply to them. Miles, thank you for calling in tonight. That's it from me. I am out of time. Back with you 4 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. Hope you join me then. Today's show, as always, on Catch Up on Global Player and the brand new LBC app. You can download the new official LBC app for free from your app store right now. Thanks again for your company this afternoon. Coming up at 10 on LBC, Simon Marks. Right now, time for Ian Dale.
Thanks, Ben. As you've been hearing, Robert Jenrick has been exposing the amount of fare dodging that's going on the London Underground. And not just that, personally confronting fare dodgers on film. Now, I've had my differences with Mr. Jenrick, but on this, I think he's performed a public service. Why do so many people have no respect for the rules? And if you saw someone breaking the rules like this, would you step in and remonstrate? Maybe you have. Is this a further sign of broken Britain? At 8, historian Tim Bouverie joins me to talk about his new book, Allies at War. And at 9, you may think this is odd, but I'm going to ask if Trump's presidency might be about to become a damp squib. I'll explain later, promise.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, police have charged a 53-year-old man after a car drove into fans at Monday's Liverpool title parade. 53-year-old Paul Doyle is accused of 7 counts, including dangerous driving and intent to cause grievous bodily harm. 79 people were injured in the incident, with 7 still in hospital. Merseyshire's Chief Crown Prosecutor Sarah Hammond says the investigation's at an early stage.
Prosecutors and police are continuing to work at pace to review a huge volume of evidence. This includes multiple pieces of video footage and numerous witness statements. It is important to ensure that every victim gets the justice they deserve.
He'll appear before magistrates tomorrow. Underwater search teams have recovered a body in the search for a missing teenage girl in West Yorkshire. Emergency services were called to report she'd fallen into the water from Batings Dam near Rippendon yesterday afternoon. The Trump administration says it will go to the Supreme Court if it's unable to block a ruling on trade tariffs. A court in New York argued the US president overstepped his authority when he used emergency powers to impose the levies. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has reportedly accepted proposals put forward by the US for a new Gaza ceasefire. Hamas said earlier it's received the plan from envoy Steve Witkoff and is studying it. And the Shadow Justice Secretary has told LBC he believes he was justified in breaking Transport for London rules to highlight fare dodging. Conservative Robert Jenrick admitted he didn't get permission to film on TfL property.
Well, I was fed up, and I felt that ordinary people who were paying for their tube, doing the right thing, were made to look silly by these people who were flagrantly breaching the rules and nothing was happening about it.
TfL says it's doing more to deter and detect fare evaders, saying it's not acceptable. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed down 9 points at 87.16. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.18. LBC weather, patchy rain in central Scotland, North England and Wales tonight, mostly dry elsewhere and breezy in the south, a low of 4. Patchy rain lingering in northern Wales and central and north England tomorrow, a few showers developing in south and east Scotland and Northern Ireland, mainly dry and partly cloudy elsewhere, highs of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good evening. 4 minutes past 7 on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you until 10. I want to return to something that Ben has been talking about. You may have caught an interview he did with the Shadow Justice Secretary, Robert Jenrick, about half an hour ago. Well, we're going to talk about the reason for that interview, because Robert Jenrick made a video, I think it was filmed last Saturday, on the London Underground, where he confronted fare dodgers. Now, I actually think he's performed public service for doing this. Now, we've always known that there are people that dodge fares. I mean, that it comes with the territory, I suppose. But when you think that it's costing London taxpayers £130 million a year, probably in excess of that, one in 25 people who use London Underground don't pay for the pleasure. Now, I think that's outrageous. And you can say, well, £130 million, that's not much, is it? Well, it is if you're Transport for London, because they always bleat on that they are underfunded, that they need more money. Well, there's £130 million that they could be using to the benefit of Londoners if they actually had the money from the people who aren't paying the fares. Now, this is not just restricted to London. This is something that happens all over the country. I completely get that. But watching this video with Robert Jenrick and him confronting people, so he's not just in an underground station, he is actually confronting people that he sees dodging fares. He actually put himself at risk with one, because the guy said, you better stop hassling me, because I've got a blade. Apparently what they say nowadays. And it is worth watching this video. And people say, oh, well, it's just a stunt. Well, at least it's a stunt with a purpose, isn't it? Exposing what I think is a bit of a scandal. Not like Ed Davies' stunts during the election, where he just did these stunts to gain media attention. Now, clearly, Robert Jenrick has done that, and we've fallen into his evil trap by covering it, I suppose, in this hour. But I wonder, if you are a fare dodger, I'm going to ask you to ring me up and tell me why you do it. I mean, you might have some sort of bleeding heart story that, oh, I'm really poor and I can't afford this, I can't afford that. Or you may have some justification for it, for all I know, but you are breaking the law by doing it. Do you do it because there's no real deterrent? It said it can't just put the fine level up from £80 to £100, but maybe it needs to be higher than that to provide a proper deterrent. So I want to know from you in the next hour, why do so many people have no respect for the rules? And have you ever stepped in to stop this kind of, well, we have to admit, lower level lawbreaking? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Well, Henry Riley joins us, LBC's reporter. He's going to take us through the events of the day. Henry, very good evening. What motivated Robert Jenrick to do this, do you think?
Well, I think he was fed up, Ian, as you said a bit earlier on, that he feels when he travels in London, he sees countless people evading fares. And it was quite unusual. Detective Chief Inspector Jenrick, as one Conservative source told me, he's spending his half-term holidays trying to catch these fare dodgers. What was interesting with the video, no suit, instead he was wearing a sort of recess-friendly checkered shirt. The Shadow Justice Secretary was at one of the underground, one of London Underground's busiest stations, Stratford. And this particular video had, when I last checked, around 5 million views on X. So it is certainly being watched by people. Take a listen to some of it.
Nearly 1 in 25 people using London's public transport aren't paying for it. It's also just annoying watching so many people break the law and get away with it. It's the same with bike theft, phone theft, tool theft, shoplifting, drugs in town centres, weird Turkish barber shops. It's all chipping away at society. The state needs to reassert itself and go after lawbreakers.
Now, it's not the first of these type of videos that Robert Jenrick has made. He did one about tool theft a couple of weeks ago when he went to a car boot sale and confronted some of the people there who had stolen tools and were selling them on. But it is quite unusual to see a politician self-shooting in this way. Often you can see a minister or a shadow minister donning a high vis or going out with their local bobbies on the beat. But this particular Conservative MP, as you can hear by that video, taking matters into his own hands. He told Ben Kentish on LBC earlier why he made the video.
We've got to see the state, the authorities, stepping up and taking action, because I subscribe to the broken windows idea that if you allow one small act of law breaking to take hold, many more people will join in, and then some of those people will go on to commit more serious offences, and the issue will just get ever, ever worse, and it leaves the rest of society feeling that the public realm isn't the safe and clean place that they want to live in, and as if the rules just aren't being applied equally. We've really got to see everybody step up and take action.
Ian, I wasn't making mischief. I was genuinely curious as to whether Mr. Jenrick had permission to film on Transport for London premises. It's unclear whether he did or not, because his team say he didn't do it for commercial reasons and therefore he doesn't need to ask, whereas someone told me, a particular source within TfL, that if a shadow minister is filming, it would be wise to tell Transport for London. But nonetheless, he had little time for that when he was asked again by Ben Kentish.
If TfL want to take action against me, bring it on. I think what they are doing is completely ridiculous and laughable. They should be spending their time trying to apprehend the people who are actually breaching the rules by not paying for their fares.
Now, a Labour source said that Mr. Jenrick's actions were pretty shameless, their words, saying he's running for Tory leader, talking about fare evasion, having overseen savage cuts to both policing and the transport budgets whilst in government. But TfL are determined to tackle this issue. They say it's unacceptable. In a statement, they said it deprives the transport network of investments. They actually point to the fact that in New York, fare evasion is around 13% of journeys, whereas in London at the moment, it's around 3.4%, according to their estimates. And their target, Ian, by 2030, is to get that down to 1.5%.
Well, I hope they do it. And I was talking to Simon Marks about this a moment ago, and he was saying that in New York, they've actually ripped all of the barriers out of the underground stations, and they put in new glass barriers that are actually impossible to jump over. And effectively, fare evasion is not possible now in New York. So maybe we're going to have to look at that here. But the idea that people are criticising Robert Jenrick for filming when he hadn't got permission. You're a journalist, Tony, you know the rules. If it's in the public interest, that is your defence. And I'm surprised he hasn't deployed that one, because I would have thought that was his strongest argument on that.
Yeah, I mean, his team are being pretty robust now, actually. I think at the start, they were slightly surprised that that Transport for London had made that point, but now they're very much doubling down. On the point about gates, by the way, Ian, I do know that Transport for London are looking at this, in particular the sort of accessible gates where you can wheel suitcases through, the slightly larger ones. There is a conversation there about how easy it is to get through, and I know that TfL, certainly from what I've heard as part of trying to tackle this, are looking at reinforcing those to make it certainly more difficult for people to trespass or to fare evade.
I've just been corrected. It was Washington where these are being installed, not New York, but I suspect that they will be looking at that. Henry, thank you very much indeed. That's Henry Riley, LBC's reporter. You can also, of course, listen to him on Saturday mornings, 4 a.m. till 7. I think I've got that right. Graham Wetton joins me now, former Metropolitan Police Officer who served for more than 30 years and author of the book How to Be a Police Officer, which I had the pleasure of publishing all those years ago. Graham, very good evening. Now, what do you make of the... I mean, it is a stunt. It's clearly a stunt. I'm not going to get away from that. But I actually think he's performed a public service by doing this, because we're all talking about it.
Yeah, evening, Ian. It is a stunt. It's clearly a stunt for him personally. He has an objective. He has a point, a very valid point. I travel on the underground most days. There are still people fare dodging. You can see it on frequent journeys. So he has got a very valid point. My issue is with the way he's actually conducted this. A sensible, responsible, balanced way would have been to contact TfL, ask to go out with one of the revenue teams and see exactly what they face every day when they do confront people who are fare dodging.
So you think he was wrong to confront the fare dodgers themselves?
I think it's a dangerous precedent when you see an elected politician doing this sort of stunt on their own without any, I presume, no risk assessment, no awareness. I presume he's got very minimal, if any, security around him at all. TfL staff, revenue staff and police officers are trained to deal with these sort of situations, to confront people, because most of these people who do fare dodge will have no problem with confronting you, as he experienced himself. So I actually think it's a dangerous precedent to show people and say to people, the state needs to step up, people need to step up and almost like call this out. My concern is if people start doing similar things, that will lead to some really serious incidents.
Well, maybe he's actually been quite brave in doing this. I think it's a bit, isn't it a bit wokey to sort of say, oh no, we shouldn't do this because of risk of personal safety. Well, we are all capable of making these decisions ourselves. We don't need to do a risk assessment. We know exactly what the risks are. And he took those risks. I mean, he was threatened with a knife at one point.
Yeah.
We heard that on the film. I say all power to his elbow. And I suspect, I mean, I've got a huge amount of calls coming in already. And I suspect that a lot of people will be taking that view and saying, well, if everybody did this, then maybe there wouldn't be so many fare dogs.
Yeah, he has a point, and there is an element of people needing to stand up and call out offending behaviour. But my concern is almost like how he's done it. And again, the right way is to notify the police, tell TfL staff, inform revenue staff that this is going on, and make them aware of what's happening, rather than maybe stepping in yourself. I can just see this being really challenging and difficult. Well, people end up going almost hands-on to people.
Maybe if the eight TfL employees who were standing around doing nothing had intervened, he wouldn't have had to do it.
No, fair point. And again, they should be redirected to... You'd like to think when he identified the barrier that people were going through that was open, because I've watched the video, they would have redeployed some of those staff to deal with that open barrier or close it, deal with it. Because, as I said, you see this every day and it's been happening for years. This isn't new as well. It has been happening for years. It does need dealing with. TfL are addressing it, along with other issues that happen on the underground system and rail network. But it's just the method is the way he did this today. I just think sets a quite a dangerous precedent. It's right that people should actually call out offending behaviour, but it's almost like do it on your own without any backup or security or risk.
Yeah, but you know as well as I do. If he had gone down the route that you suggested, we wouldn't be covering this evening because there would be nothing to talk about. There would be no video, there'd be no film, and we wouldn't maybe understand the extent of the problem, because I think it is quite shocking that if you look along an average tube carriage, in one carriage there'll be 50 people sitting down, something like that, and two of them won't have paid their fare. Now, I didn't know that before today, and I'm quite shocked by that. So he's performed a public service, I think.
To a certain degree, and I agree, he's got the right objective, but it is a dangerous precedent to set. It's almost like set an example to people that they should go out and do this on their own. And I disagree. I think if he'd gone out with a revenue team, we would still see video footage of people trying to get through barriers and being stopped and then reported the correct procedures. So I think it would still have been, whether it'd been as newsworthy is debatable. The fact he's gone and done it on his own and almost been confronted a couple of times, he may have experienced that level of disagreement. But if you go out with a revenue team, just stand by a barrier and watch a revenue team, they will actually take people out and have some form of confrontation, and they deal with it professionally and properly. Now, my concern is that if people start doing this sort of thing, take the matter into their own hands, that's where the issues and challenges.
But what you're advocating is a walk on by society, and I think that kind of society is something that we need to get away from, because if we could think of lots of other things where sometimes people are well advised not to intervene. Yeah. But if we all just sort of ignore what's happening in front of our faces, I mean, where does that leave us as a society?
Yeah, I'm not advocating that at all. I don't think you can.
Well, you kind of are.
I don't think I'm not advocating that. I actually think it should report it. But my concern is if he's advocating people should step in and actually take action themselves and almost pull people up.
He didn't advocate that. Nowhere in this film did he advocate that.
No, I don't. No, he doesn't either.
No.
I think he said people should step up. Now, what does step up mean? That could be interpreted. My concern is that may be interpreted completely the wrong way by some people. That's my concern. Stepping up should mean notifying them.
Let's look at another example. Say if a woman is being attacked on the tube by an aggressive man, whether it's just verbally or physically, and everybody else in that carriage decides not to intervene because they haven't carried out a risk assessment or they're afraid of the circumstances. I mean, I would say that responsible citizens in those circumstances should intervene.
Why have I lost the link?
No, well, you're still there, Graham.
I lost you completely.
Did you not hear what I just said?
No, if you can repeat it.
If there is an incident in an underground carriage where a woman is being attacked either verbally or physically, and all of the other passengers just sit there minding their own business, and they don't intervene because they haven't carried out a risk assessment or they're understandably afraid of what the consequences might be, well, where does that leave us as a society?
No, I'm not suggesting that either. If someone's being either threatened verbally or physically, then you have to step up and say something. That's a different set of circumstances.
No, but it's more serious in those circumstances. I mean, if somebody's being attacked physically, then the likelihood is that you might well be injured yourself. Here, it's less likely, I would say.
Yeah, possibly, but you're still confronting people. It's a confrontational situation when you actually challenge people on those barriers. I just think this would have been better better presented if he'd actually worked with the TfL revenue team and actually stood on the barrier, see them deal with people properly, professionally, rather than maybe do it on his own.
All right, Graham, thank you very much indeed. That's Graham Whetton there, former Metropolitan Police officer. We will come to your calls in a moment, because I'm really interested to hear, because look, there are always going to be two sides to every argument. There's probably more than two sides on this one. But I'm particularly interested to hear from you, if you have intervened, if you've seen a fare dodger and you've confronted them about it, what happened? And do you agree with Graham that no, this is the wrong way to play it? 0345 6060 973. It's 90 minutes past seven.
This is LBC.
Thanks to their unique boutique spirit, there really is nothing quite like a Saga River Cruise. There are the elegantly designed Spirit ships, the all-inclusive dining, and of course, Saga's carefully selected excursions. You know, they'll even drive you to and from the airport with their nationwide chauffeur service.
How long now, Charles?
Oh, half an hour.
Marvellous. Search Saga River Cruises. Experience is everything. 2026 season on sale now. Chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
With Lidl Plus Fruity Super Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free fresh fruit coupon with every shop. Download the Lidl Plus app to get by switching to the Retail Industry Awards Fresh Produce Retailer of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability. Ends 4th of the 6th, 25. Full T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/bin.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
Ian Dale, text 84850. This is LBC.
21 minutes past seven on LBC. Right, let's go to your calls. Ben's in Sutton. Hi, Ben.
Hi, good evening there. Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. What would you like to say?
Good. Right, so I've witnessed this. It's not an overt attempt. It is just something which you witness every time you go on the underground. And the station I witnessed at, I won't mention, because the station manager was very nice and spoke very eloquently on the matter. His simple first-hand experiences, confrontation leads to aggression from these people. That can lead to an assault, which leads to time off work. And TfL's response at that point will be, why did you put yourself in that position? You put yourself at risk. We've had to pay for your salary for you to be off work. And nothing would have been done about the other person. And in more detail, I understand there are less than 200 revenue officers across the entire network. And each revenue officer needs a pair of police officers to support them. That's more police away from other duties. And they only have the statistics which the station gate staff can generate. So when the staff observe, that's the first point, someone tailgating or not paying, they are obligated to log it. And with sufficient data, so a procedural event can take place where the station is flooded at certain times, not 24 hours, at certain times. But if you had persistent tailgaters or offenders outside of those times, they're not going to be subject to that swoop, and it becomes almost a self-defeating, self-fulfilling prophecy. So how do you solve it? Because you're losing $100 to $300 million in revenue per year, and the station manager said you can take TfL's public-facing figures and double it. How do you solve that? Well, you either make the barriers unworkable for tailgaters, or you introduce some form of identity capture as you enter and exit the stations. So it makes it more of a follow-up exercise to identify these people, which then becomes a longevity exercise because you've got to get them in front of a court, you've got to try and capture some money from these people, and if the court can't do that because they're not exactly having a successful time with shoplifters at this time, how do you stop people from causing so much loss from TfL? All TfL will do is capture more money from those fee-paying passengers. And I think we now need to look to other countries where they successfully stopped fare dodgers or successfully encouraged people to pay. Or we look at a different option, which is to reduce fares across TfL, increase public funding of TfL, which I'm not in favour of, and effectively turn it into a free-to-use service, which I'm not in favour of at all.
Or you create a deterrent to people to think that, well, if I do this, there will be a consequence from it. And at the moment, the consequence is the possibility of a £100 fine if you get caught, in the unlikelihood that you get caught. I don't know how many people have actually been fined for this.
Well, let me take this one step further for you. In order to be fined, the revenue officer or police officer have to obtain your details. They are, again, the revenue officers, the TfL employees, are not really allowed to make contact with you, physical contact, because that's considered an assault. If the person who you are interviewing in the station gives you, for example, Walt Disney, Disneyland, France, as the address, that is taken as being the data you're giving. It's then put through the process outside of the interview. You're summoned to court to pay the fine. And if you don't receive your summons because you've given false details, then how do you obtain that money? You can't just march them to a cash point. That is coming from the mouths of TfL employees. I was shocked when I heard it. Absolutely gobsmacked.
Mm. Well, you've given us a lot to think about there, Ben. Thank you very much. Let's move on to Maria, who's a new caller in Hampstead. Hello, Maria.
Hi there.
Hi, what would you like to say?
So, okay, so here's my experience. I work from home, and so I don't get the tube every day. But I'd say I get the tube couple of times a week, right? Either from Hampstead Station or Finchley Road Station. Finchley Road Station, I'd say 3 out of every 5 times I have someone, and it's always male, shove through and past me. I'm quite petite, and, you know, try and dodge the fare. Now, I got so, so sick of this that the last few times what I did was try to block them coming through and say, oh, is there a problem? You know, not act aggressively, but just try to say, hey, is there a problem? Like, is there something, you know, and they just try and push me through. And I try to get the attention of the staff. They're usually busy or, you know, they've got things going on. But I'll say that I'm so agitated by it. And I'm really glad that it's been brought to the forefront today, because I go home and I say to my partner, oh, again, I've been shoved on the tube. And it's like, don't say anything. Just let them do it. You don't know if they're carrying a knife or, you know, you don't know something could happen. But I'm just so agitated by just being a normal paying person. And I'm sure people have problems. But it just seems that they just don't care and they feel so entitled, there's no need to pay.
And have you ever said anything to anyone who's done this?
I have, but I'm always quite polite. I say, excuse me, can you pay your fare? Or you've just shoved me. You're going to have to pay just like I did. And they either look quite taken aback and embarrassed and then just try and shove through and, ignore me and quickly shuffle through. Or on the times I've tried to block them, I've had one get quite aggressive and, start calling me names, quite nasty things. And I'm just so tired of it. And I hear the arguments to what are these people's situations. I can't speak for every fare dodger out there, but certainly the ones that I've encountered, and being female, by the way, I don't know if it just raises something differently. We're the ones that usually are pushed through, especially like the petite ones. We're easy targets. They think we're not going to fight back. Again, I can't say that for everybody, but that is my experience. When I look around and I'm like, why didn't he choose those two men that have just gone through the barriers, you know?
Well, I suppose there's more room, maybe. Maybe that's the way they look at it. I've got no idea.
Yeah, possibly, but it's also weakness. They deem a weakness and that you're not going to fight back. But it's just dreadful, because I don't want to be afraid that somebody's going to pull out a knife on me, which I know is another big piece of news today. And I'm not really that scared. I'm quite a fighter and I'm almost so angered by it. I'd get to that point just to raise what's right and wrong, you know?
Well, Maria, somebody's making your point for you as well. Gordon in Hampstead, who says, no one's ever squeezed past me at Finchley Road Station. Being 15 stone might help, says Gordon.
So, Well, there's that. But, I have to say, it's such a shame because it's just then what happens is I get on the tube and I'm really angry at society and I feel this just rage at where it's all gone wrong. And when I was a teenager, like I'm 40, when I was a teenager, yeah, this did happen, right? It did, but not to the extent I see of almost a, why would I pay a fare when it's so easy to just shove my way through? And that's what I think it mostly is.
It's because they think there'll be no consequence for it. And that, I'm afraid, is where society has gone wrong in all sorts of ways. I know I'm sounding like an old git here, but I think you're absolutely right that this wasn't as prevalent 20 or 30 years ago. And there's so many other aspects of our society where people misbehave because they think there won't be any consequence from their misbehaviour. Maria, thank you very much. Ying says, I've not been brave enough to intervene with fare dodgers. But after someone sneaked out of the gantry by following out after me one time, I was so irked by the unfairness that I had been conscious to try to walk past gantries slowly to prevent others from doing the same again. Well, lots of you want to have your say. We'll get as many people on air before 8 as we can, so do stay with us. And also, coming up after 8, we're going to be talking to the historian Tim Bouverie about his new book, Allies at War. And there are some interesting parallels with today's events with Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, so he's going to be taking your calls after 8. But first, the news headlines at 7:30 with Amelia Cox.
53-year-old Paul Doyle has been charged over a collision at Liverpool's Premier League title parade on Monday. He's accused of dangerous driving, causing grievous bodily harm with intent and wounding with intent after 79 people were injured. Police searching for a teenage girl who fell into a reservoir in West Yorkshire have recovered a body. Specialist teams were drafted in following reports a girl fell from the dam near Rippenden yesterday. The Shadow Justice Secretary says he was justified in breaking Transport for London rules to highlight fare dodgers. Robert Jenrick has admitted to LBC he didn't have permission to film on TfL property, but says he wants the issue to be taken more seriously. LBC weather, patchy rain in central Scotland, North England and Wales tonight. Mostly dry elsewhere and breezy in the south, a low of 4 degrees.
This is LBC.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
Did you know you can get Santander cycles for 24 hours for £3.50? I spent the day feeling the morning breeze, rolling with mates, keep up, free wheeling.
For £3.50, you can get 24 hours of unlimited 60-minute rides on Santander cycles. Download the Santander Cycles app to find your nearest docking station. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Pedal bikes only. Additional charges apply for e-bikes. Other T's and C's apply.
Tired of watching your uninvested cash do nothing? With the Bank of England base rate reducing, investment platform IG is doing something extraordinary. IG is offering a whopping 8.5% AER variable on all uninvested cash. Yes, 8.5%. Just open an account, transfer money in, and make one investment before May 31st to unlock this incredible rate. Visit ig.com now to open an investment account today. Your capital is at risk. GIA, ISA, and SIP accounts only. Boosted rate applies until 31st August 2025. Terms and conditions apply.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:33 on LBC. Well, let's talk more about the aftermath of that terrible incident on Monday in Liverpool. We all know that a 53-year-old man from Liverpool has been charged with multiple offences after 79 people were injured when he allegedly drove his car into a crowd at the Liverpool parade. Chris Chambers joins us, LBC's Northwest correspondent. Chris, what are the latest developments? There's some fairly lurid newspaper headlines this morning I saw.
Yeah, that's right. Evening, Ian. We already knew that a 53-year-old man was in custody after the incident on Water Street in Liverpool on Monday. This evening, though, we've been told Paul Doyle, who is a father of three from the West Derby area of Liverpool, has been charged with 7 offences. One of those is dangerous driving, and the others relate to the injuries sustained by some of those who were there. It was Sarah Hammond from the Crown Prosecution Service who explained what the charges are.
The Crown Prosecution Service has today authorised Merseyside Police to charge Paul Doyle, aged 53, from West Derby, Liverpool, with offences of dangerous driving, causing grievous bodily harm with intent, wounding with intent to cause grievous bodily harm, and attempting to cause grievous bodily harm with intent.
So aside from the dangerous driving charge, the 6 other charges relate to 6 individuals who were injured, 2 of those being children. Now, it is important to point out at this stage that while the police conduct the investigation, it is the CPS who approved the charges. And the police told us today in this press conference that this remains a live and ongoing investigation, and there is the potential for more charges further down the line if and when they have further evidence. Now, in terms of what we can say about Paul Doyle, legal proceedings are now active, so we can say he's 53, we can say he's from Burghill Road in West Derby, that he has been remanded in custody and that he will appear before Liverpool Magistrates Court tomorrow. We also had it confirmed by police that a total of 79 people suffered injuries, 50 of those went to hospital and 7 remain in hospital in a stable condition.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Chris Chambers, LBC's Northwest correspondent. Several of you, including Randolph, are making this point. OK, Mr. Dale, says Randolph, it's OK to break the law to prove a point. And it's in dishonest Bob Jenrick's world, it is. Is it? I don't know. Whatever. No, I think you're completely wrong on this. Transport for London have local bylaws which do not have the role of a national law. They're rules that they impose themselves, saying that you have to get permission to film within one of their facilities. Well, there are ways around that, because if something is in the public interest, as a journalist, we would happily film inside places if we thought there was a public interest in doing so, even if a local rule said that you shouldn't do that. And that, I think, ought to be Robert Jenrick's defence here, in that he was exposing what he thinks is a public scandal. And on this, I'm completely on his side. And if you've listened to the programme in the past, you'll know that I've not always been on Robert Jenrick's side. When he made an intemperate speech about immigration a few months ago, I wasn't backward in coming forward in criticising it, and he didn't like that at all. So I'm not a Robert Jenrick fanboy in any sense, but I think on this, he's done something that is actually for the public good. Steve is in Petworth. Hello, Steve.
Good evening, and I totally agree with your stance and the last comments you've just made. A little anecdote for you, Ian. My other half's in childcare. She was on the train up to London a couple of months ago. She saw in front of her, through the gap in the seats, a man filming a little girl sitting with her grandmother. She went to the chap in public and said, "Stop doing that. I can see exactly what you're filming." She asked people in the carriage to help her, which was full. Not one person helped. This is the society we've got, and you mentioned it earlier on. It is a walk-on-by society.
Hmm. Well, that's a disgrace, isn't it?
It's a disgrace. And these people jumping on the bandwagon to say Robert Jenrick was out of order filming, I'm sorry, that man was out of order filming a young child, and not one person stood up to help. Good on Robert Jenrick for doing this. We should start name and shaming these characters.
See, a Liberal Democrat supporting friend of mine WhatsApped me and said what a disgrace it was that Robert Jenrick had done this. And I'm thinking, if it had been Ed Davey doing this, you would be saying, oh, what a brave man Ed Davey was. And the trouble is, people look at this through the perspective of their own politics sometimes. And I think, well, let's face it, all of the stunts that Ed Davey did, they were puerile, they were funny sometimes, and, I mean, they made us all laugh, but the only point they had was to raise his profile in the election campaign, and very successful he was too in doing that. But to then say that Robert Jenrick is wrong to film in this way, to raise an issue which ought to be of concern to everybody, well, I think these people need to grow up.
I couldn't agree more. Your first guest, Graham, was it? He spoke. Yeah. I copied a couple in it. Redirected, redeployed, addressing it. Sorry, we need collectively to stand up and call this out. And again, same with you. I'm not a great fan of Robert Jenrick, but well done for doing this. And if he's listening, well done, Mr. Jenrick.
Thank you very much, Steve. Tim says it costs between £8.90 and £16.80 per day to travel on the underground. Well, that is if you go through sort of various zones. A single ticket is not as much as £8.90. They know if they're caught, they'll get that fine and they take the risk. The cost of fines and travel is a lot to the poor. It's more than they earn an hour after tax. It's not the job of entitled snitching toffs to police workers' community on a socialised travel system in a cost of living crisis, especially Robert Jenrick. Of course you're on the side, Mr. Dale. You have never struggled. Jim, you clearly know nothing about me. 20 years ago, I remember walking along Cromer High Street with 16 pence in my pocket, with my bank account had reached its maximum overdraft, and so had my credit card. So don't tell me what I've lived. I admit I live a very privileged life now, but I've worked damn hard for it, and I'm not going to apologise for that to the likes of you. Paul is in Worcester Park. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Ian. Don't normally agree with you, but definitely do on this occasion. You being a well-educated man will probably remember in the 17th and 18th century how the population used to set up what was called a hue and cry if they saw an offence being committed in their midst in the street, and would all either give chase or join in to, like, catch the thief or the perpetrator.
Actually, I didn't know that. You've educated me.
Oh, sorry. I thought you ever heard the phrase hue and cry?
I have, but I thought it was a band.
No. Hue and cry came from a call that was 17th, 18th century, like London. If someone was seen committing an offence,
okay,
a hue and cry would be set up, and people would sort of like join in and chase or stop the perpetrator. But that's what we need again. We need the approbation of society. We need for people not to feel safe if they commit these low level crimes in front of other people. If I see people committing this sort of stuff, I join in. I helped out a cashier in a petrol station a few months ago when she got like attacked by someone who went in there was trying to rob the store. And if everyone joined in like that, less and less people, especially like the low level criminals, would look on us as easy pickings. And to hear that police officer talking about that, how far have we fallen? And it was the police who started this 20 years ago when they used to say on the news, oh, this villain or that's done that, we don't want the public to get involved. No, we want the public to get involved. If the public get involved, I don't want a gated community view of this. I want the community to get involved. And if they did, if we all get involved, if we all police one another, we police their own society, you wouldn't get this sort of low-level crime. I want the approbation of society to be felt by people who commit these sort of offences. So I'm in agreement with you, and well done for Robert Jenrick. And shame on that police officer. You know, when a police officer talks like that, we are in trouble. You expect him to say the very opposite, don't you? Then we talk about health and safety, and, you know, the review should have been done, this, that, and the other. Shame on him.
Well, I'm not going to go quite as far as you on that, but I do take your point. And I just think over the years, we've got to a point where some people just don't know right from wrong. And even if they do, they think, well, it doesn't really matter because nobody's going to catch me for it. Let's go to Valerie in Balham. Valerie, hi.
Hi, yeah. I mean, a lot of the points have already been mentioned that I was going to mention. But it's true. People, they just think they can get away with things because they can. It's not a cost of living crisis. You know, these people aren't poor. They're just taking advantage of the situation, knowing jolly well
some of them may be poor.
Going to happen.
Some of them may be poor, but that is not a reason to break the law. It's like, do you remember, I mean, back in the 1980s when unemployment was rocketing, that was always used as an excuse for sort of increasing burglary and shoplifting. Oh, well, it's because people are poor. Or I think it's really insulting to poorer people to automatically assume that they're more likely to break the law than others. I just think it's outrageous.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know, these people are just hard-faced and they just feel they're entitled and they can do that. And somebody like me, if I say things to them, when I go home again, like the lady previous, she gets told by her family, oh, don't do that because you'd get hurt. And, you know, but I feel angry each time I travel on the tube. You know, I'm always seeing something that's not right, and it's not a pleasure to travel anymore, you know, because you just feel surrounded by fare dodgers. You tell the staff, the staff aren't bothered. They sit in the boxes. They're not aware of what's going on around them. They're looking at their phones. You know, they're not really being vigilant about anything. And I know everybody's scared to make a confrontation with these people. But there's no deterrent. No. I mean, whether they should change the barriers to suit this day and age to stop.
Well, I hope they do look at that. Thank you very much, Valerie. Just one other story I saw today, which is not really related to this, but there is a little bit of a crossover. I saw on the Telegraph website today, there was an incident in Canterbury yesterday where a car somehow flipped over on its side, and there was a husband and wife and baby trapped inside. And there was a whole load of teenagers saw this happen and immediately rushed to the scene, and they managed to get the baby out first, then the mother, then the father. Sort of had to break windows in the car and pull them up through the door or something like that. But and after it, they were all high-fiving each other. And I thought, well, what a brilliant thing. They didn't wait to do a risk assessment. They didn't wait till the police or the fire service or the ambulance came. They took action themselves. They took it into their own hands and did the right thing. And that's all I'm suggesting here, that people should do the right thing a little bit more often, and that will improve our society. But if we just all turn the other cheek and just ignore the fact that people are transgressing the law, then I just wonder where we're going to be in 20 or 30 years' time. Because if we engineer a society where there are no consequences to wrongdoing, then we are going to get to a point where people turn to politicians who may have some simplistic answers, but they maybe have better answers than the people that have failed the population in the past. And that is where we're heading right now. It's 7:45.
LBC, this morning, on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Here's the tale of the tape. In the blue corner, you have a fairly burly 51-year-old police officer, Stephen Smith, who has a pepper spray and extendable nightstick. With him is the 36-year-old police officer, Rachel Camato, who has a taser. Both of them have stab vests. In the other, you have a 92-year-old man in a wheelchair with one leg and a 4-inch butter knife. I warn you, this is distressing.
Donald, put it down!
Taser, taser!
This is a day of utter shame for the police. The fact that they were cleared at Southwark Crown Court I find truly extraordinary, but they will now face disciplinary proceedings. It can only hope that they're both booted out.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco. Every little helps.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So, don't give up, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Nothing beats a jet-2 holiday. Discovering amazing destinations like Ibiza, Lanzarote and Crete. And relaxing in the sun with award-winning VIP service from the Which? Travel Brand of the Year 2024. So, book now from London Stansted with Jet2 Holidays. Package holidays you can trust. Patronat or protected, subject to availability and conditions.
looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Ian Dale on LBC. Text 84850.
7:48 on LBC. This is from Tony, who says, bring back the Have a Go heroes, without whom Princess Anne would have been kidnapped back in the 1970s. I'm not quite sure we can make the analogy here between fair dodging, but I know what you say, because you're right. If that person hadn't intervened, there could have been a very, very serious outcome to that. And I'm not sitting here suggesting that every time anyone sees something going slightly wrong or that's dubious, that everyone should intervene. Clearly, it has to depend on the circumstances. Clearly, it has to depend on our individual judgments. And it doesn't always have to end badly. I was on the train home the other night, and I had my AirPods in, listening to whatever podcast I was listening to, and I couldn't listen to it properly because a woman over the way was playing music loudly on her phone. Like, not, she didn't have any headphones or anything. And after about 20 minutes, I thought, oh, I can't stand this any longer. So I politely approached her and just said, would you... And she said, oh, I'm so sorry, I'll turn it down. And I just said, thank you, and everything was okay. It doesn't always have to be confrontational. Let's go to Adrian in Islington. Adrian, hi.
Hi, and hope you're well. I do believe that this problem is mainly on the tube because they are not being challenged. The only thing that you need to push through is the barrier. I'm a London bus driver, and I see this every single day when I work. It's different on the buses because you do have to interact with the person, and there are type of people that will try any type of like excuse. Sorry, I lost my zip card, I lost my freedom pass. But when you challenge them, it happens to me that if I challenge someone who says that they lost their card, you challenge them, he says, sorry, no, you can't get on. They end up paying at the end anyway. So I do believe it's the fact that it's just a machine, so they try to avoid it because no one is challenging them. And if they push it through, that's it. No one is trying to catch them. With me, I'm a kind of person that I do see people struggling, and I do see them like trying to get on my bus, but they're very polite, usually drug addicts, homeless people. They're extremely polite. They do ask you, could you please let me on? I'm homeless. Sure, I have no issue with that. I don't have a problem with that. But if I see someone trying to sneak in or just walk past me through the front doors, going straight to the front, to the upper deck, I'm not having that. I'm just stopping the bus and I'm going to challenge them. And you know what works the best for me? Just to embarrass them in front of everyone, saying, look, I do get like homeless, addicts, anyone trying to get on the bus for free, and they are polite, they have manners, they do ask, and they say thank you. But if you walk in and walk past me and don't say anything, I'm sorry, I'm not having that.
And how often do they turn aggressive?
Usually what happens, they get so embarrassed that they either swear at me and they walk away. That's what happens usually.
And have you ever been in a situation where you thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done this because it turns nasty?
Absolutely not, because you do your job and you know what you do, right? So I'm sitting in a cab and I can recognize people, the ones that are like try to make a mickey out of you. So like yesterday, I had a group of four youths, and they were saying, sorry, we lost our zip card. And I said, no, sorry, you're not getting on. Every single of them paid with their Apple Pay and paid for the fare once I challenged them. So people will try to avoid the fare. That's what I'm trying to say.
And your situation, it's actually much, it's very different to the underground, isn't it? Because you're literally on your own. You don't have any backup there. So it's all got to be about your judgment. And this is where I think Graham Whetton, our police friend earlier, got it completely wrong, because he said, well, you have to carry out a risk assessment and people shouldn't intervene. Well, if you did that every day of your life and didn't intervene, you probably keep yourself a little bit safer. I completely accept that. But you have a job to do, and you're doing it to the best of your ability.
Absolutely, but I'm not saying that I'm intervening, that I'm trying to argue with them. I'm just asking them questions. And, you know, once you start asking questions, there's so many people, drivers, that would just say, yeah, come on, or they don't care. But if you start literally just answer them or give them a question, and they will say something, they just going to end up paying at the end.
Mm.
Because they're just trying the luck, basically.
Well, you keep at it, Adrian. Well done. Thank you very much for your call. Simon's in Southwark. Hello, Simon.
Hi, Ian. I'm so glad that you've raised this, because it makes me so angry. I mean, I used to tube at London Bridge and Elephant and Castle, sort of borough area, sort of five times a week. And I see it maybe two or three times a week. Someone pushes through the barrier. They don't care. There's no deterrent. The staff are absolutely useless. I've told them before, they're not interested whatsoever. And, you know, the people just don't care at all. And I think, I'm not a Tory, I've never voted Tory, but, you know, Robert Chadwick has done a really good thing in highlighting this, because no one listens. Sadiq Khan doesn't listen, doesn't do anything about it. All I hear is excuses. I mean, the Lib Dem person, I don't know who it was you were talking about, they are appalled by that response. I just think it's ridiculous. You know, this is a massive problem in London. I pay for the tube every day. You know, it's not, you know, I don't have loads of spare money. You know, I could do a saving a bit of money, you know, but I don't do that.
No, and most people would, I think, take that view. I don't use the tube that often, because I come into Charing Cross and I just walk up to Leicester Square. But I've used it a few times over the past few weeks to go out to North London for various reasons. And I must admit, I've never seen anyone do this. And of course, I'm now thinking, well, if I did see someone do it, what would I do? And I can't give the answer to that until I was in that situation, I suppose. I'd like to think I would alert the staff at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, I've confronted someone a couple of times, but, you know, they're just ignorant. Sometimes I'm a bit wary about doing it. They are a certain, you know, they're always young men, almost always. Mm. You know, and you could break it down by demographic as well. There's certain groups of people that do it more than others. I mean, you know, and it's not just me that says it. Some of my friends live in other parts of London, Clapham, for example. They see the same thing, like, all the time. It just makes us all angry. You know, we all pay to use the tube, and we're subsidising, you know, a group of people that just don't bother. Yeah. And there is absolutely no deterrent, and Sadiq Khan needs to get a grip on it.
Simon, thank you very much indeed. Another Simon says, Ian, one other point. Nick Ferrari got poor Henry to try and take a ladder on the tube one morning. Did Nick get permission? Oh, I wish I'd known that when I spoke to Henry earlier. I could have ribbed him about that, couldn't I? But there we are. And Catherine says, are there any other words in the English language more chilling than risk and assessment? I doubt it. Naeem is in Acton. Hello, Naeem.
Hi, Ian. Good evening. Thank you for letting me. I know the time is a short line. I completely disagree with the fares, whatever line. People try to dodge the fares, whatever line. But, well, I just want to bring the point. If we look at us as a society, line, I was struck, by the way, like last year, like, they're waiting for the wife and the kids coming from London. They're coming out of the North Acton station. The amount of, I was there for 10 minutes, whatever, the amount of people, whatever, just dodging. I wasn't surprised, but I was surprised the amount of people, line, sort of going through without paying. But we have normalized these whatever we can call it, like little sort of a mini whatever, like, you know, crimes or whatever. Like, there are crimes, you know, you committing whether not paying the fare, whatever. Like, but if we look at, like, you know, the assaults on a society, or the ambulance staff, police officers, wherever you go, like, you know, these things, or the supermarkets, whatever, people just walking in the shops and whatever, like, you know, filling up, whatever, it's become a norm, which it shouldn't. But the people are not scared, because they know they're going to be sort of punished for it, whatever, like, and it shouldn't happen. But Jenrick is making a point. I was victim of a crime 2 years ago, like, in two occasions. One was assaulted, by a cyclist, and the other one, I got a vehicle stolen. Police didn't do anything like it. It was on his watch. He's been minister on so many positions. Is the reach from him to come now and say, like, yeah, I agree highlighting. Yeah, it should have been highlighting, but is nothing going to be done? Because they had the chance for 40 years to cut down the crimes, and the crimes just gone over the roof, like, you know. And people have normalized now. Like, these things, it's not bother. It's no big thing about it. We just walk past, don't pay a fare, be rude, be assault the ambulance staff, assault the hospital staff, whatever. And just as a society, we completely, we have accepted this, like, and people just carry on. There's no punishment. That's the reason people behave that way, like, you know.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in what you say there. Thank you very much indeed, Naeem. Somebody says here, what about tax dodgers? Yep. What about them? I'm not defending tax dodgers. If tax dodgers are breaking the law, then you go after them. I don't see any conflict to that. You can't sort of defend one group in society for breaking the law and then condemn another. It's got to be all or nothing. And successive governments over the years have tightened up the laws on tax dodging. But in a sense, you're never going to be able to complete the picture because there will always be loopholes that clever accountants will find. But I'm not going to sit here and defend tax dodgers, I can assure you. Right, coming up in the next hour, we are going to talk to Tim Bouverie. He's a historian and journalist. He's the author of the book Allies at War, The Politics of Defeating Hitler. Now, I think there are lots of lessons that modern-day leaders can take from this book, not least Donald Trump. If you think about it, after the war, the three different world leaders, Churchill, Truman, had been Roosevelt, and Stalin went their own separate ways. Well, in a sense now we've got Russia against the rest of the West. What can we learn from the relationships between the three countries during the Second World War? 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.